This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora. How are you all out there this evening? It is wonderful to be here. Hello. Welcome to the AA Live Radio Show. Gosh, can you believe we are in April already? This is scaring me how fast this year is going. Can't believe we've had Easter already. I'm mourning the holidays already. Hey, look, tonight we are going to explore the ideas behind a way of recovery through the 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous program. Thank you for joining us out there from around the motu and the world this evening. It is lovely to have you here. Now, I have got a guest on this evening who I spent a bit of time with yesterday. They're from America, so we're going a bit international tonight. They're going to share their story with us, but we'll get back to that. I want to talk a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous this evening. We are a service which is based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We work through the 12-step program with a sponsor guiding us. Some of us go out there and do it on our own. I don't highly recommend that. Our sponsor, if we're clever enough to get one, is an alcoholic with more recovery time under their belt than the newcomer. So we support each other and we go to meetings and we chat about life and we learn to live life without the craving of alcohol and the complete mental obsession about having it, drinking it. And we learn a way to live without picking up that first drink. And It's life-changing, I have to tell you. I have got lots going on in my life at the moment, and I am a very grateful alcoholic in recovery as I work through a few things in my personal life that feeling a little bit challenging. But the nice part is I can go to a meeting, I can get an absolute reprieve for an hour or more, talk to a few other people who understand the way my brain works and not feel like I'm alone in all these little challenges. So, yeah, I love it. I didn't think I would ever say that, but I love my life with Alcoholics Anonymous in it. Now, I do need to tell you that the opinions that you hear this evening, they are just our opinions. They are not those of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Okay, this is a couple of us getting together, having a chat and talking about the different aspects of recovery. We are no spokesperson for Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I do want to just share a reading. That is in the month of April. It's called Looking Within. It's the step for April. Number 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That's from our 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 42 book. Step 4 is the vigorous and painstaking effort to discover what the liabilities in each of us have been and are. I want to find exactly how, when, and where my natural desires have warped me. I wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and myself. By discovering what my emotional deformities are, I can move toward their correction. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, there can be little sobriety or contentment for me. To resolve ambivalent feelings, I need to feel a strong and helpful sense of myself. Such an awareness doesn't happen overnight, and no one's self-awareness is permanent. Everyone has the capacity for growth and for self-awareness through an honest encounter with reality. When I don't avoid issues but meet them directly, always trying to resolve them, they become fewer and fewer. And I have to say, I truly believe that. Now, I have to warn you, I'm going to do a bit of reggae night tonight. So we're going to pop a little bit of, you know, this movie is out at the moment. So we're going to put a bit of this star power in the music this evening. Enjoy some of Bob Marley and the Wailers. I do love a bit of Bob Marley and the Wailers. I hope you enjoyed that as well. Now, we're going to have a little chat with Harvey. This is the fellow in the fellowship that I caught up with yesterday. I hope you enjoy this story of experience, strength and hope. Have a good listen to this. Welcome, Harvey. It is so nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, Jen.
Look, we have got Harvey here tonight. He has travelled to New Zealand for quite a special investigation, but it's not for me to tell you. All I need you to know out there, listeners, is that Harvey is here and we are honoured to listen to his story, his experience, his strength, his hope. And we're sitting in my car looking out at the sea. The sun is out and it's not a bad day, would you say?
Not at all. Lovely day.
Wonderful. Well, would you like to start us off about, I suppose, your experience, where you were at the beginning, why you even looked into AA? What's sort of been your going way back?
Just previously to getting into AA, I was living with a person who is very special to me, and my behavior had become really unmanageable. It was unpredictable, unreliable. There were times I lied. And that was not a good way to be functioning in a relationship. My significant other finally decided that she had had enough, and she said, I'm taking you to an AA meeting. Well, she did just that and dropped me off at the meeting. I went in, and I had no idea what was going on. I didn't exactly understand why I was there. I did not think I was an alcoholic, because to me, it was the same old stereotype of someone who is destitute with a long coat on and a brown paper bag in their hand, standing on a corner or sitting on a park bench looking lost. But as soon as I entered the room, I noticed that something was very odd. None of it seemed to fit my picture of the stereotype. In fact, there were people who were laughing, they were shaking hands, and it just seemed to me like, well, maybe this was a group of people who had just gotten together to talk about ways to control their drinking. And they had it down. And they were there to help other people learn how to control their drinking.
Oh my
gosh. So they could fit in.
I was the same. It's crazy, isn't it?
It is. It really is crazy. And at that first meeting, they actually had me read the gifts of the program. And, of course, none of that seemed to make a lot of sense, because I didn't see how working any program could get me to the point where all of a sudden life began to be rewarding for me as an individual, as the individual I was. And that meeting ended. They suggested that I get a sponsor. So I got a name and some numbers and never called them. But I did go back at another meeting that was closer to my home, thinking, well, maybe these people will really be telling, I can figure this out and I'll fit in better rather than this program that didn't. Oh, yes, it seemed to make sense because it was simple enough to read, and I'm an intelligent person who understands the English language. I went to the second meeting, and no one really approached me about calling a sponsor or anything else. They just said, keep coming back. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll do that once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks. I'll keep coming back. In the meantime, I started reading the program. And yes, it just did seem very simple. And so I started working the program in my mind. And I'm just going through, checking off boxes. Yes, 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 yes. And everything seemed in place. I could figure it all out, made sense. But there were no changes. I was still scared to death. I didn't know how to behave in different situations. And there was just chaos in my life.
Were you full of fear?
Oh, definitely. I was full of fear. And that was the main thing. From the time I was a tiny baby, there were things that did not make sense to me because my parents could not be there for me. And so I did not get a lot of instruction about, well, this is how to play with other children. This is what's appropriate. This is how to get invited back, or this is how to invite friends to your home. This is how to share. And so I never received any of that. I did get some tips, and my parents always had the attitude, preserve the dignity, which is you didn't do anything that would embarrass yourself or anybody else. So I stayed very reclusive and did not fit in with groups. We had moved from New York City, where I did have friends, and they were friends of a lot of different backgrounds and beliefs, and I enjoyed playing with them.
How old were you when you left New York?
I was 5 when I left New York, and believe it or not, I had already had my first drinking experience, and I'd already been saved once unaccountably and by one of those things that was, an odd coincidence, but very fortunate.
Mm.
The drinking started when I was 2.
Wow.
We were living in Brooklyn, New York. My father, it was summertime, and I'm very hot-blooded by nature.
Right.
My father had left a cool beer can of beer on low down where I could actually reach it. And I was very inquisitive. I had a very inquisitive mind. I kind of toddled on over, picked up the can, and took a sip, and I liked it. I liked the taste, so I drank the whole thing.
Mm.
And my parents, as soon as they saw me staggering around a little bit, they called the doctor to find out if there's anything they could do. And of course they said, no, you can watch him and make sure nothing unusual starts to happen. If he shows that any of his vital signs are starting to fail, certainly bring him in to an emergency room. But other than that, he may survive this. The thing about being saved at an early age, my parents had taken me to a party. They took me and my sister, who's 3 years older, to a party in Brooklyn, and I was walking at that point. But they turned their eye at one point. There was a swimming pool with steps in it, and it had a deep end. And while no one was watching, I did like to sneak off and explore. I walked on down the steps, and I'm on the bottom of the pool, and someone, not my parents, noticed there's a baby on the bottom of the pool, and he jumped in and pulled me out before I started drowning or anything.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was the first little miracle that happened to me.
Wow.
But I had this idea that I had to survive sometime on my own thinking. And that actually started even before I was born. Before I was born, my father was diagnosed with cancer of the jaw and tongue. He was a heavy smoker at that time. And while I was in the womb, this was about a month before I was born, my parents talked about bringing the child into the home. And I have memories of hearing their voices while I was in the womb saying, "You're coming into a loving home. We will love you." And
did you find it to be a loving home?
I found it to be a very loving home. But I also heard some of their conversations about concern, what would happen to my father, because they were concerned. You know, we've got a baby coming. You may not survive this. They don't know how to treat this exactly. They're going to do experimental surgery.
So you had a heavy weight on you as soon as you came into the lab?
I had a heavy weight. And I actually remember coming out, I was spanked, and there was bright light. And I remember hearing this outrageously loud scream. I was screaming. I'd never screamed in the womb.
Yeah.
It was me.
Oh, my gosh.
And a little later, I remember these faces looking around me because I was a serious baby because of what I'd heard, and they're trying to make me laugh.
Wow.
So those are my two earliest memories from childhood.
That's frightening. That frightens me. In general, I don't remember anything from before four.
And I didn't discover this, Jan, until much later after I was already in outpatient treatment.
Right.
But I came into the world, yes, with, first of all, that concern that I might be alone or deserted. And then after my father had his operation about a month after I was born, and he changed his His aura or his electrical field, something about his body changed. And I could not connect with the father, my father, for the rest of my life.
Right.
I felt emotionally detached from my father.
Right. Yeah.
And he had to go back for operations.
They took
operations.
The essence of him out.
They had to take my father back for operations to tweak this because it was experimental. He had died twice on the operating table. And the only reason he was survived was by a miracle. My uncle, who was his younger brother, knocked on the plexiglass and said, he has two children. You must save him. They'd already walked away and given up. They walked back and cut open his rib cage and opened it up and massaged his heart by hand. So he made medical journals in that way.
Wow.
They never expected him to be able to talk again because they had to reattach his tongue. They took bone and grafted it from his leg into his jaw, and he learned to talk. He was able to use that arm that had the muscles all cut up, and in that sense, again, he was a miracle. But he had the love of his family, and when he came back, he had after-death dreams. After he remembered somebody calling him, calling his name, saying, come back for the family. And he came back.
Do you? How long did he live for? Was he in your whole childhood in the end? Or?
Yeah, he lived until I was 1974, 25 years old.
Right.
He never completely regained his full health. It was several years before he could take a regular job, which was after we had moved to a rural town in Connecticut, and his work was limited. He couldn't do real heavy work or push himself too hard. Mm. So
your whole childhood was changed, basically, from what they dreamed it was going to be.
It was completely changed. Mm. So to those who have been deserted by their families or orphaned or adopted by other parents, please know that you also can overcome this, that there is a way to find peace and quiet in your life and to recover from those. You can heal those memories and injuries.
So I know you've been 35 years sober this time. How long did it take in that 35 years for you to feel that peace and healing?
I got a little piece of it in outpatient treatment, which started 1 year after I had my last drink.
Right.
Again, it was my significant other who said, you're not changing. You're going to programs and you're not drinking. You are not changing. You're dry drunk.
And you didn't have a sponsor at this time?
I did not have a sponsor at this time. I was running my own race. It was my program, Harvey's program.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It wasn't the program. There's one program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went into outpatient treatment, and they worked heavily with all the new people. And it was most amazing because one of the things they showed was love, unconditional love for each patient. And one of the very first things they did was exercises to discover our emotions. And I discovered I was emotionally bankrupt, that I'd suppressed everything for a very, very long time except fear and anger, and that I was also spiritually bankrupt. So the first time we did an exercise where I felt something strongly, I had to ask the person in charge, what is this that I'm feeling? I'm feeling tingling from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. And the person said, Al, that's happiness.
Okay, so you did some work on the inner child side of you, and you've come to just over a year. Nothing's changing for you.
Yes.
Your partner's saying you're a dry drunk.
Yes.
What's the next move that you do?
The next move is I keep working the program until they get to the sixth step, because we were able to work through the first five. And I already had a sponsor while I was in outpatient treatment. And then I got that sponsor stayed with me for quite a while, or I stayed with him for quite a while. At that point, I was working each of the steps and was receiving guidance and understanding of the importance of each of the steps and what could be done, what the results might be. And I came to understand the importance of complete honesty. What has taken me all these years is to understand that even though I work on, say, the fourth step, my memory has been selective at times, and there are still things that I've held back. And so something will pop up, and I'll say, oh my God, I had something to do with that. I played a part in why they were acting the way they were acting, and I might not have expected anything different given what I was doing.
It's amazing, isn't it? I was actually talking with my sponsor today, and we were both agreeing we never stop learning. We never stop learning in this program, and I'm so grateful for that because,
me too.
Light bulbs, bing, bing, constantly.
And that's why they say it's 365, 24/7, because there's no telling when that dream might come up, or the memory might be stirred by something one hears from that time period, like an old song, or hear the title of a book, or remember the name of a playmate. I've remembered names that I'd forgotten for many, many years, and all of a sudden I'll be doing something completely unrelated, and bing, up pops the name. And I say, oh my goodness, I have to write that down and think about this some. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with surrendering my life over to the care of God, because He is bringing these things into my mind so I can heal things and repair things and be as whole as I possibly can and be as loving as I can too.
Mm. Yeah. Did you find yourself to be a stubborn person before you came into AA?
Absolutely. Before I came into AA, remember, I was on a survival mode. I was keeping a low profile so I would be under the radar and no one would make a fuss over me. No one would say, oh, you're doing excellent, or you do this so well. Some of the bullies wouldn't notice me. I did as much as I could to become invisible, sometimes out of sight, sometimes just not drawing attention to myself in any way I could. But stubbornness was, yes, it was my will, and what I wanted when I wanted it, how I wanted it. And there was no discussion about that. If I didn't get it, then I was going to be very passive-aggressive and just make a stink when it was very inappropriate, or sometimes refuse to do anything.
When you started going through the steps and when your next move, as you got through them and got there, did you start having those experiences that showed you this is a good way of life?
Yes. Some of them I did not realize they were gifts until I thought about them for a while, but always they were so unexpected. That's the thing that just amazed me, how something could happen when I'd not done anything to prepare for it. There were times when I would do proper things, and even before the anticipated event or whatever was coming up, I would need to use those things that I'd done in preparation. One of the most amazing things that I remember happening is when I was working, I was going, even before I went to work, for about a week, I'd been noticing this pair of shoes that I had in my room. And they were a little too big for me, and I didn't want to just throw them out. So I noticed them again just before I went to work on a Monday, and I said, oh, for some reason, the idea popped up take them to work. Yeah. There are plenty of people at work. Yeah. Maybe somebody there can use a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
So without thinking about why, I simply put them in my bag, caught the bus, and I'm riding the bus, getting off at the first stop, and suddenly a young man is trying to get on the bus. He has no shoes.
Wow.
And the bus driver says, I'm sorry, but you can't get on the bus without shoes. He had a guitar with him in a case, and he stepped off the bus. I got off the bus and said, I heard what the driver said. You need a pair of shoes. I happen to have a pair of shoes with me. Let's see if they fit. He put them on and he says, they fit exactly. And I said, well, now you can get on the bus. Austin City Limits was happening at the time, which is a big musical event that draws people from all over the world.
Right.
He was going to Austin City Limits. And he just looked at me and said, how can I thank you? And I say, it's a gift.
Yeah.
It's a gift. You don't have to thank me.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
Oh.
I caught the next bus to carry me to work. And then I walk about half a mile to work after that. And as I'm going along, tears just started coming down my cheeks. And I said, thank you for this opportunity, God.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was. There was no way I had planned that and certainly never would have done something like that.
Yeah. Do you find that you, well, this is it, isn't it? It's, we're a selfish lot when we come into the rooms, and then we become selfless, and we hand over as many times as possible, I find. And sometimes they just come out of nowhere. It's a wonderful thing, service, like
yes,
you're doing today, you know, to share your story with us. Is someone out there is going to click with what you've had to say, and it's amazing.
And that's the reason I'm doing this. I felt an overwhelming responsibility for the fact just that I have been saved. My life has literally been saved so many times that I am financially able to come here. It was imperative just to share this and let other people, especially anyone who is still suffering, know that I was suffering beyond imagination. I put myself literally through hell of my own creation because, in my opinion, it does not even exist. The only thing that really exists is love.
Mm.
Fear can stop me from doing something because it's my own mind bringing up that fear. Love does not stop me from doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have choices, and those things that are done in a living way, in a loving way, work.
Mm. So would you describe your life today as something you never thought you would have, or this comfortableness in life?
Absolutely not. I, before I got to high school, I did not expect to live to be 20.
Right.
Because one of the people who I knew and identified with very closely, who was a musician and performing recitals at the age of 10, was bullied. He was bullied so badly he felt absolutely isolated, Jan.
Mm.
He committed suicide. Mm. He hung himself. And I identified with that because I was bullied. I never expected to live, you know, to the age of 20 even, because I did not see any hope. I did not see how anything could save me. I had many plans. Each stage, when I lived past that age mark, 20, 30, 40, there were things that I wanted. Harvey wanted.
Aren't we lucky?
We're very, not lucky, blessed.
Yeah.
We are indeed blessed. And
people
have said, oh, you have, what a coincidence. You are the luckiest man I've ever talked to. Luck has nothing to do with it.
No.
I've been saved so I can be of service, so I can let other people see what the grace of my higher power is.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's great. Thank you so much for sharing
with us
today.
Oh, you're so very much, Jan.
It's wonderful.
You're listening to AA Live on ORFM Dunedin.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. I had a good time spending a little bit of time with Harvey, having a chat. Now, I wanted to ask a couple of questions out there that I want you to ask yourself. Is AA for you? Now, we've got a pamphlet that we put out, and these are some of the questions we ask ourselves. And I'm just looking at the one that I did when I first came across this. So I'm going to tell you my answers. Have you ever decided to stop drinking for a week or so, but only lasted for a couple of days? I had to tick a yes. You could be a no, but, you know, you got to ask yourself. Number two, do you wish people would mind their own business about your drinking and stop telling you what to do? I had a yes for that too. Number three, have you ever switched from one kind of drink to another in the hope that this would keep you from getting drunk? Oh, definitely, I was a yes for that one. Have you had to have an eye-opener upon awakening during the past year? Now, you might think, what does that mean? Do you need a drink to get started or to stop shaking? You know, this is a pretty sure sign that you're not drinking socially. Now, personally, I went with the shakes for years, but I ignored it. I shouldn't have, but I did. So, you know, if I'd known about this little pamphlet, I would have ticked yes. Do you envy people who can drink without getting into trouble? Now, that was a no for me. You know, I got into trouble, but I just sort of thought it was what would happen. I just didn't think I was a good person. So, of course, I was going to get into trouble. But, you know, that is a yes or no question. Since I've identified that, I would have marked a yes. But number six, have you had problems connected with drinking during the past year? Now, you need to be honest here. Doctors say that if you have a problem with alcohol and keep on drinking, it will get worse, never better. Now, this is true. Eventually, you will die or end up in an institution for the rest of your life. That's Korsakoff syndrome. You can't actually peg couple of words together. You can't think a couple of thoughts together. Yeah, the only hope is to stop drinking. But yes, have you had problems connected with drinking during the past year? And I have to tell you, folks, I've had health issues since I've given up that are related to my drinking. Not so good. Number seven, has your drinking caused trouble at home? Mine was a definite yes. Lost a marriage, lost a home, lost lots of stuff. Number eight, do you ever try to get extra drinks at a party because you do not get enough? Now, I have to admit that I was the one that continued the party somewhere else. Normally had a couple to get going, you know, so that's a big fat yes for me. Number nine, do you tell yourself you can stop drinking anytime you want to, even though you keep getting drunk when you don't mean to? Now, I have to be honest, I was a definite yes for that. You know, many of us have kidded ourselves at thinking we drank because we wanted to. I realized after I came to AA that it was this complete obsession. I mean, I honestly thought I was going crazy before I came into AA, because I just couldn't stop, and I'd want to, and I just couldn't. And so, yeah, I have that obsession of the mind that thinks I need more. Number 10, have you missed days of work or school because of drinking? Absolutely, yes. 11, do you have blackouts? Now, I got to tell you, folks, I never thought I had blackouts, but I have gone back through my brain on many a thing, and yes, I actually had a blackout the first time I picked up alcohol and had a night on it. I 14. I cannot recall whole sections of that night. Never did I ever think that that was abnormal, but guess what? It is. It's a bit crazy, that one. So that's a yes. 12. Have you ever felt that your life would be better if you did not drink? Now, I had that feeling many times, but I just ignored it because my saying to myself was, how could I possibly survive without drinking? It was my friend. It got me through everything. I got to say, that's concerning just the way I was thinking. So, you know, we started to drink because, you know, drinking made life seem better, at least for a little while, and that was definitely the thing for me. By the time I got into AA, I felt completely trapped. I was drinking to live and living to drink. I was working to drink. I was doing everything, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired and drinking. So, yeah, ask yourself those questions. Maybe you want to come into the rooms, check it out sometime, see what's going on. I'm going to do a little bit more reggae. I just can't help it. I've got to go with a bit of Tiki Tane and a remake he's made. Get up, stand up. Here we go. Bring it on.
This is Tano Fanta from my right. I know what that is. See? And I don't care who the guy is. Because my right is my right.
Stand up for your rights.
I've got to tell you, if that hasn't woken you up, there's something wrong out there tonight. Now, I just wanted to close up because I'm running out of time. Oh, my goodness. Look, closing acknowledgements for this evening. I have to say thank you to Dommy, my producer. He's always wonderful. And Jeff, you know, they're pretty good people up here at ORFM, which is what we're listening to this evening with the AA Live radio show. Our friends on Otago Access Radio at 105.4 FM to us are wonderful. Now, I just want to remind you all that there are no membership fees for AA. If you want to come down to a meeting, have a coffee, a biscuit if you're lucky, all you need to do is turn up. Go to a meeting and sit there. Look for the similarities, not the differences. You can sit in the back of the room. Nobody even, you know, you don't have to talk to anybody if you don't want to. Jump on our website with aa.org.nz. Now, that website is full of incredible information. So, you know, it'll show you where the meetings are across the whole of New Zealand, times, what type of meeting, whether it's online, whether it's in person, whether it's open meeting, which means you can take a support person with you if you like. Closed meetings, those are ones just for the alcoholics. So, yeah, you know, you don't have to do it alone. Find an open meeting, head down, take a friend. 0800 AA Works. Now, that is a phone line that we run, and please do give it a call. It is a bunch of alcoholics answering the phone, alcoholics in recovery. So we know where you've been, we know where you're at, we understand. Give us a call on 0800 AA Works. I'll give you that number as well. It's 0800 229 6757. So you can also email us here at the radio station. So aa.live.radio@gmail.com. I love to get emails. Please do send them through. We are going to finish with another bit of reggae this evening and another Kiwi artist. We are going to go with Catch a Fire in the reggae revival tonight. So I want you to take care out there. Thank you very much for joining me this evening. It's always lovely to spend an evening with you. So take care out there, folks. Until next time, Matiwa. Just say no to this music and we will take it higher. Yeah. I've got nothing to lose, got nothing to prove. I got to keep on moving. Skank till I'm ill. I wanna see your hands in.
the doctor away. Reggae music in the morning keeps your head right. Reggae music in the evening keeps your soul tight. Reggae music, music. One time for the down presser.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.